one thing that really bothers me is the blasé way in which leftists say that fundamental economic assumptions about the workings of the market have been debunked. This is thrown out there with alarming regularity. Now, I'd be okay with this if it was just a few of the more extreme or silly types on Twitter, but when a man of the intellectual gravitas of Gary Edwards is saying that he doubts the invisible hand exists, it is cause for concern. In this video, I want to talk about why markets, if left to run on their own, work for the common good, and to explain why attempts to mess with this cause problems. I want to talk about resource allocation. To do this, let's use some examples. In our society, we have a certain demand for cheese, a certain demand for yogurt, and a certain demand for ice cream. Some people want ice cream, some people want yogurt, and some people want ice cream. We do not know how many want each. Even our best guesses would probably be well off. I want to talk through how this works under capitalism, how it worked under the Soviet Union, and how it might work in some other theoretical scenarios. So first things first, cheese, yogurt, and ice cream all have one thing in common. They are made from milk, so the supplier of each product requires milk to manufacture it. Now let's say in our example society that milk costs 2 gold pieces to purchase and cheese, yogurt and ice cream are each sold for 4 gold pieces. Now this state of affairs being just so is unlikely to arise because it assumes that the demand for each of these products is equal, but that's unlikely to be the case. Let's put in some variables. Let's say that this year, blessed are the cheesemakers. Maybe there's a cheese craze running rampant in the country for some reason. And let's say it's been a particularly cold year, so fewer people than normal want ice cream. So demand increases for cheese, and demand drops off for ice cream. In this scenario, it is unlikely that the prices would stay the same. First of all, the milk producers aren't going to be treating all of these producers in an even manner anymore. They stand to make much more money with the cheesemakers than the yogurt or the ice cream makers. So the cheesemakers get first dibs, first bidding on the milk for the best price. So the cheesemakers get to retain the same low cost as before, but this pushes up the price of the yogurt makers and the poor old ice cream makers. And this means if they want to stay in business, they have to put up the price of yogurt and ice cream. But in this situation, the cheesemakers may start to think they have a captive market and so might sneak up the price of cheese. But at the same time, the yogurt and the ice cream makers figure that if they are ever going to increase demand again, they need to take a hit and drop their prices. And so they do. And now, cheese costs too much for some of the new fair weather cheese fans, or maybe the fad has simply died down, and so demand for cheese decreases. And meanwhile, the new low prices of yogurt and ice cream attract new customers for those goods. And now the power dynamics between the cheesemakers, not quite so blessed in this time, the yogurt makers and the ice cream makers is more at a parity. And so they have more bargaining power with the milk producers. And so it goes. This is how prices work and how the market responds to changing demands. It is incredibly dynamic. And best of all, for the customer who wants products for the best prices. Best of all, competition within each of the industries will act as a check and balance against prices ever getting extortionate. Let's pretend the cheesemakers decide among themselves to form a cartel and sneakily keep the price of cheese artificially high. It would only take one rogue cheesemaker to slide in and undercut them to take the lion's share of demand and business, which would put all the old cheesemakers out of business. This happened time and time again in the 19th century, as the likes of Milton Friedman and Murray Rothbard will tell you. Cartels don't work in the long run because there'll always be some enterprising chap who spots the gap in the market. I'd recommend reading up on free market cartels if you have the time. They cannot sustain themselves unless they get the government on their side because the logic of prices which drive up the markets is too fierce. And in fact, I will include a lecture by Murray Rothbard on this in the show notes. Now, in the Soviet Union, they didn't allow the free market to function. Rather than allowing consumer demand and prices to decide what happened, a chap such as this would use various obscure calculations to allocate resources as he saw fit. So you can see he's decided here that yogurt is healthy, so we need lots of that. He's also decided for some reason that no one needs ice cream, and that perhaps following the teachings of Epicurus, we need only a handful of cheese. Sorry, no ice cream for you, comrade. But in practice, this leads to some gross inefficiency, the stockpiling of certain goods regardless of the demands. The central controls don't actually change what people want. So let's say demand for yogurt is massively below what our chap in Moscow projected. Now we've got a warehouse full of yogurt soon to go off on our hands, and this problem just keeps escalating.
Всегда на всю номенклатуру продукции цены устанавливались не непосредственно предприятиями, а государственными службами. По существу на всю номенклатуру выпускаемой продукции, а ее номенклатура исчисляется примерно 25 миллионов наименований, цены утверждают в Советском Союзе органы ценообразования. Численность сотрудников нашего комитета примерно 400 человек, высококвалифицированных экспертов, которые проводят всю эту работу, которые включаются вот в многочисленные прескуранты. Это далеко не полный объем прескурантов. Эту стопу можно было бы еще увеличить примерно в два раза. Мне кажется, что это является ярким свидетельством того, что такая система рациональна. Безусловно, вот эта вот система цен, она сегодня очень громоздка. И внедрение современной техники позволит сжать эту стопу прескурантов, допустим, вот до нескольких книг или дискет, которые предприятия могли бы располагать у себя на рабочих местах. Одну секунду, извините.
But that's an extreme. Let's get back to our capitalist model. How else can it go wrong? Well, let's say the government decides to put a price control on one of the products. Let's say, for example, they fix the price of cheese at 4. In that event, the industries not under such control will take advantage like so, and the fixed price of the cheese will start to look very steep. Sucks to be a cheesemaker. Or let's say the government fixes the rate workers must be paid at in the industry. And in this scenario, same consequences, sucks to be a cheesemaker. Or let's say the government fixes the total amount of cheese that may be sold with a quota. Here, the cheesemakers have been artificially nerfed, to use the gaming parlance, and there are limits put on how much they can produce, and therefore on how much wealth they can create. In each of these cases, it should be clear that the government is imposing political power in place of people power. In the situation where the markets are working on their own, it is in fact the people who are dictating how much stuff is produced and how much they are willing to pay. In each of these other cases, it is the government who is dictating what the price should be and therefore taking that decision out of the hands of the people. In so doing, they always, and I mean always, create a mess.
Нам нужно было все вместе сидеть ночи просиживать, чтобы придумать такие модели, которые позволили бы народному хозяйству, его отдельным отраслям повысить экономическую эффективность и на этой почве повысить производительность общественного труда, а на этой почве повысить благосостояние людей. Мы пытались и все от нас зависящее делали, чтобы для решения этих проблем ввести большую экономическую науку. Большую. Не подделками заниматься, а большую экономическую науку.
Into this computer the planners fed all the information they could find about Soviet society. For a brief moment in the mid-60s, it revitalized the hope that science could control society in a rational way.
И некоторые из этих людей действительно питали иллюзии, не зная хозяйства, иллюзии, что можно с помощью электронных машин все планировать, все предсказывать и так далее. Но это была утопия.
Пока это еще сказать, что полностью получилось, я не скажу. Начинает получаться, начинается набирать темпы, Но пока еще не все реализовано то, что предложено наукой.
Почему?
Потому что надо, чтобы те, которые реализуют это, надо, чтобы понимали в науке и овладели ее основами.
When Stalin died, much of the machinery of terror disappeared. The planned economy flourished. But as it did so, strange things began to happen. The planners discovered that what seemed rational to them could lead to the oddest behavior. Whole trainloads of output traveled thousands of miles for no reason, simply to fulfill a plan that measured success in tons carried per kilometer. Folk tales about the plan began to circulate.
План есть план. Он нас уже по боку бьет, этот план. Вот. Значит, счетчик накручивает. Это для того, чтобы план большой, километраж нужно выполнить. Если километраж больше сделаешь, там 400-500 километров, значит, тебя наказывают. И вот для того, чтобы этот план выполнить и укладываться в определенный километраж, некоторые люди двигатель подставляют и обратно накручивают спидометр.